Now, this azimuthal anisotropy, if you think about it, is sensitive to the early evolution of the system, where the system is denser and also more eccentric. So the question is, how thermalized is the system at freeze-out? Well, at freeze-out, one thing you can do is just use your statistical mechanics that you learned as an undergraduate. You know the energy levels. They are called resonances, and you have their masses and the widths in the particle data book. As a first approximation, you take them for good, and you take them for good. You don't assume any medium modifications. And you just fit a temperature and a chemical potential to the observed particle ratios, and that tells you if statistical mechanics is applicable at freeze-out. And it really seems to be, in the sense that ratios which are yields and ratios which are different from each other by many orders of magnitude, like k minus over k plus, which is the order of 1, and omega over pi minus, which is order of 1 over 1,000, they all seem to fit within the same temperature. And you can say that the statistical model is very phenomenologically successful, and if you go to any conference which has a heavy ion session, you're probably going to see this graph in some form or another. However, a fit does not make a theory. I mean, we already knew that soft hadronic abundances are approximately exponential. So some people say just the fact that you can fit a temperature to it and a chemical potential to these abundances by itself, how do we know that they're real temperatures, that they're real chemical abundances? If you're using fits, that this is really the system volume at freeze-out, how do you know that they're not just epicycles, meaning fit parameters which have really no significance? They just come from a wrong model. And moreover, there are also fits which are half decent of proton-proton E plus E minus. They don't quite fit as well, but they fit okay. And in heavy ion collisions, we know, you can make a case that the system is locally thermalized, but what about in proton-proton E plus E minus? Is it thermalized or not? If it is, and you base your information on the evidence from the fits, at what point, I mean, if it isn't, if it is, then how can you conceptually understand it, and if it isn't, at what point is your statistical model physically justified? Now, there are other problems. I mentioned hydrodynamics in the beginning, and hydrodynamics has had some stupendous successes, but it also had some pretty bad failures. And in particular, with respect to freeze-out, you can actually measure the space-time distribution of the fireball at freeze-out directly, basically from particle interferometry. You assume that there is a blob of locally thermalized fluid which emits purely quantum particles, and you get an interferometry term on it sensible to the space-time shape of the blob. And if you try to use the same hydrodynamics, which fits so well on anisotropies, to fit this interferometry data, you just fall flat on your face, it fails, and no one knows why. So the bottom line is that freeze-out, if you want, exactly how it happens and why is thermodynamics applicable to it, if it is still not a well-understood problem. And finally, I mean, again, we're trying to use statistical mechanics. It should be the preferred approach because, in a sense, that's what we're doing heavy ion collisions for. We're discovering a phase transition. A phase transition is a concept from statistical mechanics, so we hope that statistical mechanics applies, but ultimately, it's a tool. It's a tool with which we want to understand, if you want, thermodynamically, the dependencies of, say, temperature on the energy and the system size, and eventually we would like to extract features out of it which, for example, suggest a phase transition. I mean, statistical mechanics is a tool. So how successful has it been? Well, to understand the energy dependence and the bulk dependence of what happens, not very, because there are many interpretations, they're all based on statistical mechanics, and there is no consensus on several things. For instance, there are people who claim, there has been a claim made that the energy, the threshold energy for a phase transition, is actually the low energies of SPS at CERN, something like 8 GeV center of mass, 8 GeV center of mass, And the reason for this is that at this energy, you observe these sharp discontinuities between several observables, which seem to suggest that there is some kind of something interesting going on and that it's a collective effect, because it only happens in heavy ions. They are known as the kink, the horn, and the step. The kink is basically the absolute multiplicity on the number of participants. It goes linearly up, both at low energy and the high energy, but here you get a kink. You get a very sharp dependence, which could signal that the entropy density of the system is changing. The horn is the k over pi ratio. If you go in energy, here you have a sharp increase in kaons, but then you have a sharp increase in pions, and because of this, you have this really sharp feature here. And this might signify that the strangeness per entropy ratio is changing. And the step is a step in the effective temperature, so it's both temperature and flow. And what it might suggest is that there is some latent heat. All these things are discontinuities, and they could possibly be phase transitions. But to say that for sure, I mean, again, thermodynamically, if you do thermodynamic fits, what exactly is responsible for these features? Is it the temperature? Is it the volume? Is it the chemical potential? What is it? And no one actually knows. Or, to be more exact, there are many people with many different opinions. Everyone thinks they know, but the answers are all different, which means no one knows. It has been originally suggested this observer, the horn at least, was actually predicted. It was predicted from a toy model based on thermodynamics with just pions and kaons on the one side and light quarks and strange quarks on the other. And the basic idea is that the high temperature phase has a completely different strangeness density and entropy density, and because of that, when you reach it, your strangeness per entropy ratio should be different. This was a toy model, it's not a quantitative model. This second idea realizes it and quantitatively fits the data pretty well, but it abandons chemical equilibrium. It explains the horn by a phase transition in which after the peak of the horn, there is supercooling, and there is also chemical non-equilibrium of all quantum numbers. So the chemical potentials are not constrained by detailed balance, and the quark abundance is actually higher at equilibrium because you're coming from a very high entropy density phase. And this explains something like the horn pretty well, but it's being criticized because basically you've just multiplied your fit parameters. So again, are you overfitting, or is there something to this? Plus, there are alternative explanations. For instance, according to a more just equilibrium statistical mechanics explanation, the horn arises because to the left of the horn, the system is baryon-dominated, so most of the energy and the entropy is carried by baryons, which already existed there. And to the right of the horn, you have a meson-dominated system where the system is basically more transparent and the bulk of the energy and the entropy is carried by mesons which were created during the collision. As you can see here, they don't quite reproduce the sharpness of the horn, but they have a half-decent fit thing, and you know, this is heavy ions, nothing is supposed to fit too well. So who's right? Alternatively, there is also an explanation which is based on the lack of equilibrium between kaons and pions. So basically, there are many models, and this field is at the stage in which some of them should be actively be sought to be falsified rather than developed, so we know if one of them has a connection with physics. Heck, we could have discovered a phase transition. Another big feature is strangeness enhancement. Again, it has a long and illustrious history. It has been noticed just by very elementary kinetic hadronic calculations and perturbative QCD calculations that the strangeness quantum number has a much faster equilibration time in a quark gluon plasma. And also the strangeness abundance and equilibrium in a quark gluon plasma is different from that from a hadron gas, just because strangeness carriers over temperature should be much lighter in a QGP than in a hadron gas. So basically, if there was a quark gluon plasma, there should be more strangeness. We should look for strangeness enhancement. We looked for this and we found it. At both SPS and RIC, strange particles are enhanced, and in fact, multi-strange particles are enhanced much more than singly strange particles, and omegas are enhanced by as much as an order of magnitude. However, once again, what does this mean? Well, the people who wrote the original strangeness enhancement paper believe that what's happening is that you've seen a quark gluon plasma. Again, if you do a statistical model fit based on the grand canonical ensemble, you find that what systematically changes with system size is volume, which you expect. The more volume you put in and the more your freeze-out volume is. And also, for heavy ions, gamma S, so the phase, the strangeness quark number occupancy, is growing, because which you interpret as, well, you've been living in a phase which is much more efficient at producing strange quarks than the hadron gas. So you expect to find strange quarks within the hadron gas above chemical equilibrium. And again, they fit the data pretty well. However, there is also a more conventional statistical mechanics explanation that, as you remember from your statistical mechanics 101, the three ensembles you can have, the grand canonical, canonical, and microcanonical, are the same in the thermodynamic limit, but they are wildly different far away. If you use statistical mechanics for proton-proton collisions, you get an additional factor away from the thermodynamic limit, which comes out of the fact that you have to conserve strangeness exactly. And to create, say, an omega, a triply strange particle, the phase space weight is much, much smaller, because you have to create 3 units of anti-strangeness, and strangeness is conserved exactly rather than on average, as in the grand canonical ensemble. And because of this, you can reproduce the strangeness dependence of the strangeness enhancement just from these canonical effects. And you can also roughly reproduce the magnitude. So again, you have two pictures. We've seen a phase transition, or no, we've just seen normal statistical mechanics with a different choice of ensembles. In short, we need something like, I drew inspiration in my years at McGill from the many talks in cosmology and whatever, and you need something like a cosmic microwave background, an observable which has the potential for quantitatively testing models and ruling them out. And you need it for heavy ion collisions. I've realized one observable, I've come to realize that this observable is event-by-event particle number fluctuations. Event-by-event particle number fluctuations, or to be slightly more exact, the dependence of the simultaneous, this analysis of fluctuations with respect to averages, with respect to the particle yield that you've seen a few transparencies ago. Fluctuations were introduced as a dramatic signal. They were introduced as a signal for a phase transition. Several people, I mean, if you find a critical point, fluctuations should diverge. 5 minutes? Yeah. So they should be enhanced. On the other hand, in the quark gluon plasma, they should be suppressed. I mean, there were several observables, and the problem is that they're all very motivated, but if several of these things happen, you might destroy your amazing signal. And in any case, in the experimental data, people have measured fluctuations, and they found certainly nothing dramatic happens. What you naively predict for quark gluon plasma fluctuations, which you see, are far above, and they are similar to what you are expected to get in a run-of-the-mill hadron gas. So people dismissed fluctuations for a while. Most of the heavy ion community dismissed them as a not very useful observable. But again, let's take our cosmology analogy. You know, there were no big surprises in the cosmic microwave background either. Does that mean that that's not a useful observable? No, it's a very powerful observable that, if you take it together with yields, if you take it together with the data points which I've shown for the averages, it has a big potential to rule models out. And that has never been done. And it is an important step to do, because statistical mechanics basically means, I mean, the statistics means the law of large numbers. It means that fluctuations scale in a certain way with respect to yields, and the physics is in the scaling, and they go to zero in some kind of large number limit. So a real test of statistical mechanics, rather than just a fit, is, can yields and fluctuations be explained by the same temperature and volume and chemical potentials and whatnot? And I have little time and all my results are preliminary, but in any case, one big result is that if you use an equilibrium statistical model, the one of the graphs of the graph I've shown in my second transparency, the fluctuation of k over pi ratio, which is still a preliminary result, so don't take it as gospel, but the fluctuation it predicts is way too small, so yields and fluctuations together do not fit with the same parameters. One way of making it fit is a model based on supercooling and oversaturation. The explanation of the horn I gave, which before I said it's overfitting, where when you put in fluctuations, it's not overfitting anymore because all the parameters are very tightly constrained now. It doesn't mean that this model, I would believe it's correct, because there is only one fluctuation measured so far at RIC, for example, but more are coming, so this model at the moment fits remarkably well. We will see if more data points, it will still fit well or it will be destroyed. I found, as in Statistical Mechanics 101, the fluctuations, unlike yields, even in the thermodynamic limit, are ensemble specific. You can calculate them in the canonical ensemble and in the grand canonical ensemble, and they will give you a different answer, which basically means that experimentally fluctuations are a very wonderful ensemble or meter. They can tell you which ensemble is physically appropriate. And the canonical ensemble really overestimates the experimental fluctuations, while the grand canonical ensemble, without detailed balance, I said, is doing relatively fine. And finally, fluctuations can be used to really map freeze out what's happening in the later stages of the collision in detail from experimental data. The way you do it is that resonance decays correlate the decay the multiplicity of the decay particles in a controllable way. Every k star decays into a kaon and a pion. Last slide. Every k star decays into a kaon and a pion, and because of this, the number of k stars diminishes the fluctuation of kaon over pion, and this way, the difference between the fluctuation of a ratio not correlated by resonances, like k minus over pi minus, with one which is correlated by resonances, will give you the k star abundance at formation, while a direct measurement of k star by invariant mass reconstruction will give you a k star abundance after all interactions. So if you analyze them together, you can really experimentally find out how long was the interacting phase between hadron formation and hadron decoupling. What happened to the k stars between the time they formed? That is given by the k star k over pi fluctuation, and the time they stopped interacting. That is given by the direct detection of k star. Experimentally, this hasn't been done, but I'm ready to analyze it. In conclusion, this is my take on phenomenology, and I hope fluctuations can really rule out most or all of the models we're talking about. Thank you.